with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, and we are joined now by our basketball insider, Mike Grenier. And Mike, welcome back to MSO. I'm back in New England after a quick trip down south. How are you doing?
Good, especially after the game last night here. At home, the Celtics finally did what they capable of doing.
All right, let's go back.
37 points, you know?
Let's go back to the first game, Mike, because that was a game of high anticipation. You know, the Celtics, a rough series against Atlanta, but they prevailed. And then I saw stuff on, what was it, Monday night that I couldn't believe I was seeing. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon, I had his second, what I consider, bad game in a row.
Right.
A horrible pass at the end there. And, of course, other turnovers that were just awful. So So tell me about the atmosphere in the Garden that night and what you saw.
Well, the Garden that night, you know, obviously there was a lot of anticipation in a positive way because Embiid, you don't want to see a star player get hurt because you always feel better if you're beating a full complement of great Philadelphia team rather than one that's banged up. And, you know, so with Embiid not there, those obviously the fans were pumped up thinking the Celtics were going to get a runaway victory and be up 1-0 in the series. And then you didn't know if at that point, you didn't know if Embiid was going to be healthy for game two at the Garden, which turned out to be last night. So here's a great opportunity in game one. And what happens? James Harden found the fountain of youth. And he also didn't find many defenders against him that night. I mean, he had 45 points, I think it was the second highest total of his career in the playoffs. And he looked like he was in the prime of his career instead of a 33-year-old guy who supposedly can't play defense and who supposedly can't score like he used to. And he abused any defender that the Celtics threw at him. I mean, the game, what turned out to be the game-winning shot, was on a switch where Al Horford, God bless his soul, he's still a good defender, but anytime you have a quicker guard against a big center, they can juke and make a couple of moves and they can create their own shot. And that's Harden being a veteran, that's exactly what he was able to do. And he tossed up a three-pointer that went in. And, of course, that was disappointing. But the most disappointing part came when the Celtics called a timeout with like 7.3 seconds left or whatever it was.
Yep.
And they had a chance to tie or maybe win it with three. And whatever Mazzulla drew up ended up being a turnover because, you know, Marcus Smart got caught in traffic and he's trying to get the ball to Tatum and the ball was deflected and the 76ers recovered the ball and they went to the foul line and put it away. So it was disappointing on two counts, obviously allowing that three-pointer by Harden the way they did and not coming up with a suitable play to try to tie it, send it into overtime, or to try to win it with a three. So there were a lot of flaws in that game by the Celtics. The number one being for the 48 minutes that they didn't play good defense. They were just so lazy on defense, in my opinion. They were lackadaisical. They were giving Harden all kinds of shots. They were giving Maxey, who's a very good player, Tyrese Maxey, who had like 26 that night. He was getting whatever he wanted. He's a very quick player. He was taking it to the basket or shooting from outside. Tobias Harris, another good offensive option, had a solid night. So the Celtics, I mean, the thing that Rick, in that game, the Celtics shot 74% in the first half. 74%. If you're shooting 74%, you're usually ahead of your opponent at halftime by, you know, 15 or more. But instead, they were up by three.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was an indictment of the defense. And the other indictment of the defense was the fact that Philly had just six turnovers in the 48 minutes. Six. That means that the Celtics weren't forcing turnovers from Philly. So the defense had a lot to do with them losing in game one.
Were you upstairs with Nick?
Yes, I was.
All right. Upstairs, what was the conversation like as the game went gradually south? What were the writers and the observers thinking, maybe if you guys were exchanging discussion? Because we do that during the game. We talk to each other.
Yeah, sure. I mean, there was a lot of disbelief and kind of like wondering what the Celtics were doing or not doing because Tatum scored 39 that night and it came in a losing effort. And they had simply no one to guard. On a night when Embiid wasn't available, they simply had no one able to stop Harden. And that was surprising. I think most of the media there, at least in the rows that I was sitting, felt like something is dramatically wrong here with the Celtics' scheme, the way they game planned it, because They just they looked not prepared. They looked unprepared.
What about the post-game comments? Because Jaylen Brown, how do I say this? Critique versus critical. His post-game comments, I think, are always a critique, meaning he's not blaming teammates, but he's pointing out we coulda, shoulda, woulda, that kind of thing. And the other thing, Mazzulla, I read in the Globe today that, you know, he had a couple of sleepless nights there. You know, and he wasn't abdicating responsibility at all. So post game, it seems as though that they got the message, I guess, internally.
Yeah. Post game, I thought there were a couple of telling comments. One from Jaylen Brown, and I distinctly remember the play. Jaylen Brown had basically a one-on-one fast break against Harden, who was not a good defender, and he decided to pull the ball out. And after the game, he said, well, when you're running, the rest of your guys should be running with you.
Right.
And I love that comment because he was right, okay? Everyone's sort of like staying back. And then another telling comment after game one was Doc Rivers saying, I thought our zone changed the game, our zone defense. And he's absolutely 100% correct because they played a zone most of the second half, and the Celtics weren't able to get out on a fast break or attack, or they didn't know how to attack the zone. So therefore, it disrupted their rhythm, it disrupted their timing, and there's no NBA team that shouldn't be able to solve a zone within 3 or 4 minutes. So to me, that was Mazzulla not making the proper adjustments.
Okay.
And the players not executing if he did make the adjustments during the timeouts, because it worked for Doc Rivers and he stayed with it.
Well,
ended up winning the game.
It's funny. I read that in his post game comments on Wednesday night. He says to the reporters, "Anybody going to ask me about adjustments?"
So, right.
Tell me, what happened on Wednesday night?
Now, last night, I thought they came out with a totally different mindset on defense in particular. Defensively, the way Jaylen Brown was guarding James Harden from the very first minute, he was in a crouch position. He stayed close to him. He wasn't eyeing other Philly players on offense. He was just concentrating solely on guarding James Harden. And I thought he did a sensational job in setting the tone against Harden, who had scored 45 in game one. And last night, I believe Harden was 2 for 14. From the field. He had a couple shots he was unlucky on. It looked like they were halfway down. They didn't come. But he finished basically 2 for 14 and couldn't get himself going. And I attribute that a lot to the way Jaylen Brown initially set the tone. And other players obviously had to play him. Marcus Smart, other guys had to play him. And also, too, Grant Williams played a far more important role last night, not only hitting 4 of 8 three-pointers, but also defending. I always give Grant Williams credit for it, even though he can be idiotic towards the officials. By that I mean he talks too much and then he gets teed up. But last night against Embiid, a much stronger and bigger player, he was bodying up to Embiid and just trying to deny him position. And he didn't care if he picked up a couple of fouls, because you also had Horford playing Embiid. You also had Robert Williams occasionally matched up against him. But I thought they came out much harder on the two great Philly players, Harden and Embiid, defensively. I thought that set the tone for the entire game. And as Mazzulla himself said in the post game, when you get stops on defense, it makes you, and I think Malcolm Brogdon said the same thing, when you get stops on defense, it leads to good offensive opportunities. And how about Malcolm Brogdon, Rick? We've talked about him all year. Last night he scores 23 coming off the bench. Had a sensational game.
Yeah, I was happy to see that, because he was, in my eyes, a bit of a slump. And he was due that. I mean, you can't play, you know, the perfect every night, and he's played practically perfect every night for the season.
Right.
He's had a couple of bad games, and looks like he's out of that. And the other thing that I noticed in the first half last night was Embiid was just a monster on defense, but Celtics matched that with block shots on the other end.
That's right. I think Robert Williams at the end, 1 or 2, and I think Horford. I think Derek White is an underrated defensive player. He really gets his hand on the ball quite a bit, even though he's not like a big physical guy. And, of course, the other part, you know, Derek White last night had a strong, after having a bad game, won only 4 points, and he only took 4 shots. Derek White ended up with 15 last night. Now, on the negative side of the offense, you had Tatum only playing 19 minutes and shooting like 1 for 7 because he was in foul trouble. And, okay, that happens, as we know, Rick. That happens with star players and non-star players. They get in foul trouble. They go to the bench. And last night, the Celtics had such a big lead, Mazzulla didn't have to put him back in. But what I didn't like being there at the Garden, and I'm sure if you talk to other people who were at the Garden, they might say the same thing. It was his body language. His demeanor was, okay, the Celtics are up 15, 18, and he came off the court because he had the three fouls, and his shoulders were slumped, and he had his head down, and he went to the end of the bench, the very last seat, furthest away from the coaching staff.
Yeah, you know, that's weird, because I've noticed that this year, and it's like, you know, Tatum gets the credit for being the superstar, and Brown, you know, the next super. But it seems to me that Brown, dare I say it, he's growing to a captain's-like role. Am I right in that? You know what I'm trying to say?
I couldn't agree more. I think what I took from last night, one of the takeaways that I had from last night's game was that Jason Tatum was sulking, S-U-L-K-I-N-G, in a game in which they were winning by 20, 25, 28, 30 points. You know, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing from Tatum. The other guys on the bench were up and jumping when the Celtics lead was going from 18 to 20 and 25 and 27.
Mm-hmm.
But Jason Tatum was pretty much stationary and clapping moderately. I just happened to observe that because I didn't like his body language coming into a timeout. And it just struck me as not what a winning player does, you know. And I just wonder if he's going to show his leadership skills, if he has any, at some point. Because
yeah, again, that seems to be the immaturity coming out. And in terms right. in terms of leadership, that's a great thing we can talk about, you know, ad infinitum, I think, because, you know, Marcus Smart is a leader. Al Horford is a leader.
No doubt.
Jason Tatum is a superstar player.
Right.
But I don't know. All right, so what's the key coming up now on Friday night? Because they're back in Philadelphia at the Wells Fargo. And by the way, you know I love the Wells Fargo.
Yes, and I've been there. Of course, I went to the old Philadelphia Spectrum, which was right in the same parking lot
until
it got torn down in 2009. So that was a great building to watch basketball.
And the Red Sox are right next door. It's such a tremendous complex. But
right.
You know, I'm sure Embiid's going to get the MVP trophy.
Sure.
But I mean, they'll present it. You know, it's going to be a big. So what's the key tomorrow night? Obviously, Tatum's got to get his head in the game.
Yeah, he's got to get his head and his jump shot into the game. And I think number two is I think you're going to see Philadelphia come out so strong. They're going to be physical. They're going to be aggressive. They're going to be intense. You know, Embiid, of course, didn't have to play a lot of minutes last night because they trailed by so many that Doc Rivers wisely sat him down when the game looked out of hand. Now that means Embiid has had a couple more days to heal, and he should be more at full strength. Although he admitted after last night's game that he won't be at full strength for 4 to 6 weeks or whatever it is, and I believe him. He was a little bit hampered last night, and he's going to be hampered for the rest of the series. But I also believe he could be better tomorrow night than he was last night, Wednesday in Game 2.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to believe he's going to be better. I have to believe Harden will not shoot 2 for 14 again. Tyrese Maxey is getting a lot of confidence after getting 26 in Game 1. I think Philly's just will come out very strong, and the Celtics have to match that intensity. They have to match the offensive output, and they have to have the same defensive-minded approach from the very first minute of the game that they did in Game 2, the Celtics do, if they want to have any chance of winning Game 3, which they can. But Tatum has to come to play. That's another big, big factor for the Celtics. He definitely did not come to play last night, and he was grousing to the officials when he picked up fouls, and then he sulked. He's got to wipe that. He's got to have a short memory and come out and play strong in Game 3, or else the Celtics have no chance whatsoever.
Well, I just think it's interesting how the more I listen and hear Jaylen Brown, the more I'm impressed with his intelligence and his grasp of the game.
Yeah.
And I do consider Marcus Smart to be, you know, the heart and soul of the team in terms of the traditional Celtic, you know, player. But, boy, I'm getting more and more impressed with how Jaylen Brown, you know, handles things. My quick look around the rest of the playoffs.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what, the Knicks-Miami series is so interesting. You know, the Knicks were missing Julius Randle, their top scorer, along with Brunson in Game 1, and they lost. Well, Game 2, Jimmy Butler gets hurt late in Game 1, and he's missing, and the Knicks win Game 2 because Brunson had a phenomenal Jalen Brunson had a phenomenal second half. So I could see that series going like six or seven games and pick them. You know, if Jimmy Butler's healthy, I like Miami to win that series, but the Knicks are capable. They're really kind of a pretty good all-around team. So that one can go either way. I think Denver's in great shape, being up 2-0 against Phoenix. I think the Lakers-Golden State series, I don't want either team to win, to tell you the truth. I don't like I kind of do not like the two big stars on the L.A. team, LeBron. And, of course, I think that Steph Curry, and for all his greatness and all that, and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, a thoroughly unlikable player, I don't like to see them. They've already won it several times. So I kind of want a new champion crown, you know?
Well, yeah, we do.
we do want a new champion crown. So, you know, all these series are really good. I mean, you know, and the Celtics-Philly series is as good as any. I think, of course, with the Celtics-Philly, Rick, I mean, we go back to the days when Chet Walker was playing for Philly and Wilt Chamberlain and Guy Rogers and Bill Russell for the Celtics and Havlicek and Heinsohn. So there's so much history there.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, and I think that's the most captivating. Of course, we're a little biased because we live in the area, but to me that's the most historic series to follow because they've been at it since the 1960s, and it's just a phenomenal continuation of a long tradition when you have Celtics versus Philly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they're both contenders, and they both have stories, and it's really great. So you're not going to Wells Fargo. Now I don't know, how's this series set up?
Let's be Friday night, and then Sunday afternoon at 3:30 is game 4 in Philadelphia, and then come back to the Garden on 2.
Okay, so in the NBA, it's 2-2, 1-1-1.
Yes, correct.
Okay, I like that better than the Major League Baseball. I think it's so much better. All right, Mike, any final thoughts? This is great. I'm going to probably grab you on the weekend as well, but any other thoughts about what's going on?
Well, I mean, my thought is this. The Celtics are in the midst of hopefully what might be a championship run, when a lot of pundits and experts feel could be a championship run. But I think that, to me, the outstanding thought here is how much will Jason Tatum get involved? He's when he's great, he's really great. But when he's bad, he tends to go into a cocoon and not get himself involved with his teammates. By that I mean, if he's on the sidelines, you got to be up and cheering your guys on. And I just think he's sort of disengaged at times, and that's not what a superstar should do. So if he wants to show his leadership, he's at the stage of his career, he has to start with game 3 tomorrow night and carry it on throughout these playoffs.
All right, good point. We'll watch on that. Mike, thank you so much, as always, for taking the time. Love talking with you, and I'll check in with you on the weekend.
All right, Rick. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Be well, Mike. Thank you. Okay. That is Mike Grenier, a sports journalist and our basketball insider. MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.